NBC News Radio, I'm Brad Siegel. The head of the FBI is warning the threat of a terror attack against Americans has increased to a whole other level due to the conflict in the Middle East while testifying before a House subcommittee. FBI Director Christopher Wray said terrorist organizations, including Al-Qaeda and ISIS, have called for attacks on the U.S. and its allies. The rise of anti-Semitism on college campuses across America is in sharp focus as the war in the Middle East rages on. Anti-Defamation League National Director Jonathan Greenblatt says there's been some progress, but not nearly enough.
George Washington University just suspended one of the worst actors, a group called Students for Justice in Palestine. Columbia suspended them as well. Brandeis suspended them as well.
Greenblatt is set to testify before a House committee today in a hearing looking into the nexus between anti-Semitism, tax-exempt universities, and terror financing. The massive fire that burned a section of the I-10 freeway near downtown Los Angeles may have started in a homeless encampment. Speaking with KNBC-TV, Estela Lopez, CEO of the Downtown Industrial Business Improvement District, believes that was the case.
Homeless people, when it gets chilly at night, they start fires. When they need to cook, they start fires. This was a disaster waiting to happen.
Investigators are looking into the possibility of flames starting in a homeless encampment under the freeway and then spreading to a nearby pallet yard last Saturday morning. Governor Newsom says drivers may be back on the freeway in as soon as 3 weeks. President Biden will meet with the president of China in San Francisco today. Biden is seeking to stabilize ties with Beijing as the relationship between the two countries has hit a low point. The two leaders are expected to discuss the wars in the Middle East and Ukraine, normalizing communication channels, and cracking down on the flow of fentanyl in the U.S. Brad Siegel, NBC News Radio.
Labor unions built the middle class, and the middle class built America. That's the message from Teamsters Local 1932, a strong and successful labor union based in San Bernardino that represents over 14,000 hardworking people across the Inland Empire. The Teamsters are ready to help you organize for better pay, increased benefits, and improved working conditions. Reach out to Teamsters 1932 at teamsters1932.org/organize to speak with an organizer today.
Introducing Six Flags Plus, your pass to a whole year of unlimited visits with access to all Six Flags theme parks and water parks. Plus priority entry, plus parking, plus in-park discounts on food and more. Plus amazing rides and awesome events you don't want to miss. Get all you love about Six Flags, the new Six Flags Plus. All of Six Flags, all year. Experience Six Flags Plus now for just $11.99 a month. See details at sixflags.com.
It's that time of year again. No, not the holidays. Medicare open enrollment. And if you have questions about Medicare, you should talk to the local experts, Paul Berridge and Associates. Paul and his agents are certified with plans that are accepted by most of the medical groups in our area. Call 909-793-0385. Their service is free, and after 42 years in the business, their agents are trained to help you pick the plan that's right for you.
This segment sponsored by the all-new Rams Market, Rams Express Car Wash, and the Rams Ultimate One-Stop Shop at 2090 Mentone Boulevard on the corner of Crafton Hills Avenue, just across from Jacinto Farms. Rams is now open, all-new, well-stocked, bringing fresh and sharp convenience to Mentone with their clean, safe chemicals that leave your car all shiny and protected. When you buy gas inside the One-Stop Shop, you'll get savings on your car wash, make life easy, and sweeten it all with Rams. You can save with the dinosaur and their top-tier Sinclair fuel. Rams has great car wash membership deals, and you can save on gas when you wash your car. Satisfy your appetite when you drop in the one-stop shop convenience store. Smell the chicken! Delectable, mouth-watering, crispy, crunchy fried chicken, that is. Rams is now open at 2090 Mentone Boulevard in Mentone. Thank you to Rams for their community spirit and sponsoring this radio station. Rams and Mentone is waiting for you.
Announcing the grand opening of the brand new Habitat for Humanity ReStore in Redlands. What is ReStore? It's a home improvement store and retail center that sells donated furniture, home accessories, building materials, and appliances at a fraction of the retail price. Habitat for Humanity uses funds raised by its ReStores to help deserving families build rehabilitate, and repair their homes. You'll find unique and high-quality items such as furniture from major retailers, HVAC filters, canister lighting, and more. Habitat Restores rely on generous donations to help them create home ownership opportunities. The new Restore is located at 1392 Industrial Park Avenue in Redlands. Restore is open Wednesdays through Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Restore in Redlands. Restoring lives.
KCAA.
Welcome to Teamster Roundup with Randy Corrigan, a brand new show about labor and worker issues. The host of the show is Randy Corrigan, Secretary Treasurer and Principal Office and leader of Teamsters 1932, one of the largest public sector labor unions on the West Coast, representing workers in government and non-sworn law enforcement personnel. Randy Corrigan is a 30-year Teamster who first became involved in the labor movement by volunteering his time as an organizer with the Teamsters Union at the age of 21. Since then, he's helped thousands organize, mobilize, and achieve bargaining rights. He accomplished this by spending countless hours with brave men and women all over Southern California, in their living rooms, on the picket line, to bring workers towards victory. And now here's the host of the show, Randy Corrigan.
Welcome. Welcome, listeners. KCAA, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM. Randy Corrigan here. I'm back. Long-time organizer, first-time radio host. Got a lot of feedback last week from our first show. Frank, thanks for helping with everything you did. Romaldo, helping trying to keep me on track and keep me focused. I've got a little team here trying to make sure the message stays straight. We're going to really spend the next year really trying to explain to the average worker out there what a union's all about, how unions operate, the positive impact unions have on their community, and a lot of times just what union workers do and how every single day you're interacting with union workers one way or another, or quite frankly, working people and just making sure we're doing a good job of appreciating the work that one another does on a daily basis. I think that our society has not done the best job at really appreciating one another. Number one, empathizing with one another and the struggles others may have. And then, you know, just really appreciate the hard work that everybody does around us to make sure life goes well. I know last week we threw a whole lot at you. What I got after people listened was that, man, that was a lot that we really loaded up as far as like subjects and content. We didn't get into a lot of detail, but we just kind of did an overall layout of things that we wanted to talk about, subjects that we wanted to address, jobs in which union members do, and, you know, explained a bit about the Teamsters, the functions within the Teamsters, within unions, workers, how they all connect, and most importantly, how everything really connects to the community itself. And so for those of you who don't know, my name again is Randy Corrigan. I am the Secretary-Treasurer of Teamsters Local 1932 in San Bernardino. We represent more than 14,000 workers in the region, primarily in San Bernardino County, a number of cities throughout the region, as well as a number of companies in the area as well. We help negotiate, not help, we do negotiate all the working conditions, workers' salary, their benefits, their retirement plans, conditions on the job, making sure things are safe, also making sure there's an input into how operations work, because one thing sometimes a lot of employers, companies forget is that the worker is usually your best source to understand how something needs to run. And so what we're going to do again over the next year, probably hopefully longer, is really get you to understand number one, how to organize a union, and number two, how beneficial they are to the community, and kind of like we talked about last week, some of the different mechanisms that come into it. Sometimes, actually not sometimes, most of the time, everybody reads about strikes, and it's the strike issue that kind of gets to the forefront, and it's what what the general public typically pays attention to. That is, so everybody understands, strikes are extremely rare. Today on our show, we're going to be joined by the president of SAG-AFTRA. Going to be calling in Eric Goines. Going to be calling in from Atlanta to talk us through how they built worker power, to talk us through some of their gains, to talk us through a lot of the things in which they did. Obviously, people realize that these workers were on strike for, I guess when you look back at the calendars, what, 7 months? 118 days. Thanks, Romaldo. I'm sorry I keep mixing them up with the writers. My bad. No disrespect. I just, especially when you have Hollywood all banding together, you have when the writers go out, other crafts are going to respect them, as well as when SAG-AFTRA goes out, the writers are going to respect their line. And in the end, the Teamsters respect all of them. So Eric will be joining us, I think, in about a half hour, maybe about 20 minutes. We'll have him on, and we'll talk through how they built worker power. And what I'd like to do as we lead up to it is spend a little bit more time talking about, trying to recognize that it's not only strikes that define unions. It's really important for us to recognize the fact that strikes get the media attention. It's kind of what everybody typically pays attention to. But that's when things have boiled over. That's at the point, when I ask Eric when's the last time his group went on strike, it's going to be decades. A lot of times it's not like if you're in a union, you're on strike all the time. Remember, you're talking millions of workers in the country, and I know workers that have been employed at certain places for 30, 35, 40 years and never had to go on strike. They were fortunate to avoid it. And then I know some that had to maybe have a couple of them during their career. So they're pretty infrequent. I think that's really important to talk about. But they're an incredible tool, because it's important for workers in America to recognize the power that they have on the job. And that is where your power is demonstrated as workers. That's how you ultimately exercise your worker power, is that you hold back your labor temporarily, and you just get the employer to recognize how valuable the work is that's being done every day by you. And clearly you can't do it by yourself. If you do it by yourself, you're just absent. If you do it collectively with everybody together, that's where workers are exercising direct action, taking power, going on strike, and saying, hey, respect all of our collective work. This is what makes the operation work every single day. And so again, it gets, those are the things that get the headlines, the UAW, obviously what's going on in Hollywood. And, I love to tell the story like about the culinary. I think that it's really important to recognize that was averted. Romaldo, that's all, it looks like that's going out for vote, right, for that group? Yeah, so that's going out for vote. He said yes, and think about it. All of you that listen that go to Vegas, most of those workers that you're interacting with, first of all, if you get the valet or someone in the parking or someone at the front desk, they're probably a Teamster. They're most likely a Teamster. Most of those places in Vegas are Teamsters. Romaldo's catching my attention here right now. You gonna pipe in real quick?
Yes, I think it's very important to talk about this, because this strike would have had an impact, especially during this weekend, which is a very important weekend for the city of Las Vegas, because they have this major race going on.
Talking about the Formula One, right?
Yep. So you can just imagine just the issues, or not the issues, but just the impact it would have made on the city of Sin.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was leading up to. Thanks for jumping in. I've actually told Frank and Romaldo both, hey, jump in, man. Make this a collective effort in discussing things. I think you get better energy when instead of just hearing me babble on for an hour. But let's talk about the buildup. The Formula One race is coming up. Not only that, just a few days ago you had a Raider game. You got a Super Bowl coming up. You got the typical consumer electronics show that happens in Vegas, which is huge. And so you have this run at the end of the year where Vegas is expecting hundreds of thousands of visitors on a regular basis. And, what I was saying earlier was, you show up to Vegas, you, you, you go to the valet or you get in and you register at the hotel. Those are probably Teamsters at the front desk. They're probably Teamsters that handled you with your car. And then, you know, those that you go to the bar and you buy something, or you go to a restaurant and you get some food. Those are culinary workers. And almost all of these workers are union workers. And these workers, you know, every single day are going to work and making sure that Vegas operates. And so imagine if just before the Formula One race, these workers walked off the job. You have hundreds of thousands of obviously people being there to experience a race and come to Vegas and enjoy all the festivities. I'm not particularly fond of Vegas. I don't like to gamble. I don't drink a lot, and I certainly don't smoke. So you put those three things together. A lot of people love to go there and have a great time, spend a lot of money, but imagine them withholding their labor right at that moment. Romaldo?
And if I may add, it's 35,000 people that were set to go on strike. This would have been
in a very small spot.
Yep. It would have been one of the largest culinary strike in U.S. history. And before they actually made it to this time, because they had given the resorts, which we're talking about MGM, Caesars, and Wynn, they had given this deadline, which was 5 a.m. on Friday. And prior to that, they were holding different
That was last Friday, right?
Yes, last Friday, right. They were hosting different events. And what was interesting was that these were practice pickets, in a sense, but just the worker power that was taking place during this time, it was just something I've never seen before.
And they had been negotiating for 7 months prior, right? So it isn't like Correct. Somebody just pulled the trigger and said, hey, last minute. You know, a lot of times what happens is you know, we spend all this time bargaining, and then the sense of urgency is lost by the employer, and they just kind of drag it on. And then you have to have something that kind of pulls the trigger a bit. And, you know, clearly they set a deadline. They said, here's the deadline. If you don't get it done by that time, if we don't come to some sort of mutual agreement, then you're not going to have all the culinary workers in Vegas during what is a very, very peak season for them.
Yeah, and, you know, I was following the strike very closely because, you know, just imagine the impact it would have created on the city. It's something that, you know, I feel like these corporations do not realize this until that moment hits. So MGM first decided to come to an agreement. That was maybe 3 days prior to this deadline. Then it was followed by Caesars, and then 2 hours before that deadline, which was 5 a.m. on Friday, this was last week, that's when Wynn Resorts decided to say, all right, let's reach a tentative agreement.
Well, obviously worker power worked in that space. That's the whole point is, you know, the culinary union in Vegas is very, very impactful. And for those of you who don't know the Teamster history, we actually built Vegas. it was our trust funds from the central states. We get accused of it being illegal. It's actually not true. None of that was illegal. That's just the stories that are being told in the movies and all that good stuff. But we actually built a ton of those casinos to get Vegas up and running. And I find it ironic, you know, as unions have that sort of influence in Vegas to help build it and get it off the ground, you know, then corporate America comes in. At least back when, you know, they would say the Teamsters ran Vegas, at least you could afford to get a drink. I mean, you know, what is it, $15 to get a beer now in Vegas? Like, talk about corporate America going wild and just gouging the situation, and then turning around and saying we're not going to pay our culinary workers fair, like we're not going to give them a fair shake, when clearly these corporations are just raking it in. They're pounding the situation, you know, and you know, all these workers are doing is looking for an agreement to cover the next 5 years. You know, it's not like we're looking to, you know, do anything crazy or overextend everybody. Nobody wants it to be a negatively impact, you know, the economic bottom line of the employer. But why is it that the employee always has to lose in these exchanges? And so the difference between being union and non-union, that's what the purpose of the show is. The purpose of the show is to explain workers that are union have the right to bargain. They have the right to request changes. They have the right to articulate positions on a safer work environment. They have a right to demand an environment in which they have retirement programs, where they have health care, where they have health care that's not overpriced in a sense where they look for the cheapest plan. And this is one of the great tragedies of less people being union and health care being unaffordable is workers look at the cadre of benefits. They end up deciding, I'm going to take the least expensive one and making an economic decision. And then somebody gets hurt. They get ill. They run into some sort of medical situation. They go to the hospital or they have to go through a process and then they realize their health care is not as great as they thought it was. Man, it is unacceptable what's been going on in this country. Shifting the burden of healthcare costs onto workers is completely unfair. Big corporations have led this charge and over the last few decades have just dumped it onto workers. And we get this situation all the time where I hear workers say, oh, no, I got great healthcare. And then I break it down and look at their SPD and I do a comparison of what is good healthcare. And a SPD. The SPD is what they call a summary plan description. And you start to break down their health care and what they thought was good health care is not. And it's not like when you have a, let's say you need to buy a new car. You're running into an issue, your car's breaking down, or you need to get a truck. And you go to the dealer and you say, I'm going to trade it in. I'm just going to get a brand new vehicle to get me what I need. Well, insurance doesn't work that way. You show up. If you find out you're underinsured, guess what happens? You are underinsured. You can't buy up and immediately change to make sure that you're covered. The insurance industry doesn't let you do that. So these things need to be collectively bargained. Employers need to provide good health care for workers, and that is handled through negotiations under a union contract. And a lot of times the value of that gets overlooked tremendously. But, you know, me knowing what's going on in Vegas, the culinary union, the union itself has its own set of, they have their own clinics in Vegas. They have their own nurses. They have their own doctors. They actually have an entire healthcare system that is stood up to actually handle the 30,000 workers that work in Las Vegas. And obviously most of them work right there on the strip or downtown, primarily the strip. And that is a tremendous amount of people in a very small geographical area. And so can you imagine, I guess it's easy to understand why the employer said, okay, well, let's come to an agreement. Because if you lose all those workers with the Formula One coming in, they don't have a choice but to recognize the situation. And so let's imagine if they didn't. And the pain that would have been felt by all these unsuspecting travelers, individuals that love racing, show up and there's no one to serve them at the bar. There's no one to cook their food. There's no one to wait on them. There's no one to handle their, make sure that their bed got cleaned in the hotel that they're staying in. Imagine an exodus of that group of working people that is extremely valuable. And then we have to think about the times in which you hear people, you know, being disrespectful to those workers. Oh, you know, I didn't get my drink on time, or why you do this? I mean, imagine if you're at work and someone's talking to you that way too. We should really value their work and we should really value the contribution they bring. And it's important. It's a very important part of the economy in Las Vegas. Las Vegas itself drives, what is it, like 80 or 90% of the revenue? I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but, you know, almost all the money that the state uses in revenue that comes in on tax dollars is driven out of that Las Vegas economy. And when you look at, well, who really makes it work, it's the working people that walk you through every day, handling your baggage, the bell hops. Most of the bell hops in Vegas are Teamsters. I'm always going to always point out the Teamster jobs, right? Because we love to make sure that everybody recognizes that. As a matter of fact, if you wear a Teamster little button or a Teamster pin in Vegas, you'll have dozens, if not hundreds, of people point out and say, "Hey, I'm a Teamster too." They're typically working at the time in which that happens. And so, you know, just a real quick snapshot on the culinary. Congratulations to them. You know, those bartenders and culinary workers, 35,000 of them dropped the deadline at 5 a.m. Last Friday. That got resolved. I believe it's out for vote right now. It would be obviously subject to ratification. You're talking one of the largest strikes in U.S. history, especially when you actually bring that into a small geographical area. They had been bargaining for 7 months, and that would have impacted 18 casinos, including a number of them on the Strip, the MGM properties, the Caesars properties, the Wynn properties. Imagine all those not having those workers come to work for a few days. And so congratulations to them. For 5 years, they've got what we call labor peace. They've got, I don't know the details of all of it yet, but I'm assuming it's pretty good for them to have agreed. And it's out for vote. What we'll do is we'll report back later on some of the high points of what they got. And you know, I got a note here, someone saying that the MGM Resorts in Detroit has been on strike since October 17th. And so they're still out right now, right, Romaldo? Yeah, so they're still out. And so let you know, keep them in our thoughts and make sure that, you know, any way we can help those workers, we reach out to them. And, you know, obviously don't forget we have our Palmdale workers, our Palmdale Teamsters, Amazon Teamsters from Palmdale, California. They've been on strike since June. They're having a great old time extending their pickets all over the country. I think it's in more than 12 states now. Workers, Amazon workers all over the country have been walking off the job in support of them workers, as well as issues that they may have themselves when it comes to supporting the unfair labor practice strikes. And so let's transition this into SAG-AFTRA. You know, I think it's really important to spend a little bit of time talking about this before we get our guest on the phone, and really appreciate Eric calling in like he will here shortly after the break, and we'll be able to connect him. But, man, 118-day strike. And you know what a lot of people don't realize, and I'll cover this again when Eric gets on the call or gets on the show, is the sacrifice that workers make when they go on strike leads to benefits for other people, not just in other industries, but just as a whole. Do you think that the 8-hour workday happened without strikes? Do you think that weekends, do you think that having safe working conditions happened on accident? No, they happened as a result of strikes. Workers like these brave workers at SAG-AFTRA that were on strike for 118 days, they took the sacrifice for a lot of other workers. And so because they engaged in this labor dispute, they grinded on this subject. And what's that? Oh, right now or? Yeah, all right. No. See, I'm good with doing this. Like, I'm okay. You guys, I know some people are saying, you can't cut like that. Yeah, we can. It's our show. Guess what we're going to do? we're going to transition like we want to until I get a little better at this, right? So, you know, I guess I got to transition into a break here in a couple minutes or right now. Hey, we're going to go to a break. Here you have Randy Corgan here, a longtime organizer, first-time radio host. Let's go to a break, Frank.
Located in the heart of San Bernardino, California, the Teamsters Local 1932 Training Center is designed to train workers for high-demand, good-paying jobs in various industries throughout the Inland Empire. If you want a pathway to a high-paying job and the respect that comes with a union contract, visit 1932trainingcenter.org to enroll today. That's 1932trainingcenter.org.
Labor unions built the middle class, and the middle class built America. That's the message from Teamsters Local 1932, a strong and successful labor union based in San Bernardino that represents over 14,000 hardworking people across the Inland Empire. The Teamsters are ready to help you organize for better pay, increased benefits, and improved working conditions. Reach out to Teamsters 1932 at teamsters1932.org/organize to speak with an organizer today.
One of the best ways to build a healthier local economy is by shopping locally. Teamster Advantage is a shop local program started by Teamster Local 1932 that has brought together hundreds of locally owned businesses to provide discounts for residents who make shopping locally their priority. Everything from restaurants like Corky's to fun times at SB Raceway and much, much more. If you're not currently a Teamster and you want access to these local business discounts, contact Jennifer at 909-889-8377, extension 224. Give her a call. That number again is 909-889-8377, extension 224.
Randy Corgan back, KCAA, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM. Thank you for staying with us and sticking with us. Sorry for the choppiness at the other side of the break. We got Eric Goines joining us. He's the Atlanta local president of SAG-AFTRA. We're really looking forward to hearing from him. For those of you that haven't been paying attention, you'd have to have, I guess, either be out of the country or completely isolated to not understand the Hollywood strikes that's happened in the last 6 months. But we have Eric joining us. He's on the line right now, right, Frank? Eric, are you there?
I am. Thank you for having me.
Oh, man, thanks for coming on. It's great to have you. Really like to hear from you. Before you go into talking about some of the stuff and answering some of the questions, I really want to thank you guys, workers like yourselves that have walked off the job and taken direct action are really making a sacrifice for workers all over the country. As we know in the labor movement, every law, every regulatory factor, everything that benefits working people has not been given by corporate America like nice and easy. It's typically been the flow over of something like you just got done doing is some long, drawn-out strike where you take the sacrifice for all other workers in America. And it's not to say there won't be any other labor disputes. There will. But, you know, what you did is an incredible sacrifice. All of the members of SAG-AFTRA need to be commended on how diligent you were, how you stuck together, your solidarity, and you got the American public to recognize how important it is to withhold your labor from time to time. And the purpose of our show is to teach, actually, the general public a little bit more of that so we can have a little bit more so that workers can get a little bit more, right? So with that, Eric, how long have you been a member of your union?
Well, first of all, let me say what a privilege it is to be here. I mean, starting a show off like that, I really couldn't imagine a happier place to be right now. So thank you for those kind words.
Yeah, you're in friendly company.
that was, I guess, unexpected and really, really appreciated. It kind of makes me a little emotional. So I thank you.
You're welcome.
100 thank yous. What was the question? How long have I been in service? I joined my union in 2014, and I started in leadership, I believe, at the end of 2015. So I jumped right in.
Yeah, you did.
I jumped right in at the local level and got on as a board seat and a local board seat, and then just kind of been pushing myself to serve within our union ever since, and now at a national level, serving on the national negotiation committee for 2023. So it's just a privilege and an honor to be a part of the process.
You know, and those of us that are familiar with Hollywood, we actually read all the credits. I can't say we read them all entirely because they move a little too fast at the end of a movie or the end of something. But a lot of people may not realize that there's actually a lot. I recognize you're in Atlanta. There's actually a lot of filming that goes on in Atlanta, right?
Yeah, last year, Atlanta local did $4.4 billion worth of business in our industry, and that includes 2 months of the WGA strike. So had the WGA strike not happened, we could have had probably a banner record year. But even with it, we did $4.4 billion, which is quite an achievement for one local.
So, you know, most workers in America today, they just kind of go to work, and they think, well, the boss is in control. I always argue it goes back to the 1776 formation of this country, and that corporations owned labor, and that there's this sediment that they just have that much control, and we've never really rectified that. So that's a whole nother subject for another day. But the point is that most workers go to work every day, and they just think that, well, the boss says I got to do this. This is what it is. Here are the working conditions. They have the right to add incentives, take incentives away, add benefits, take benefits away. You know, it's their company. They can do whatever they want. Clearly, that's not the case in our union world, right? Like, there's obviously there's issues in which we have the right to pursue. Technically, it's almost every single issue impacting work we have the right to pursue. And so with that, a lot of listeners may not realize, like, the core issues in which you were fighting for in this strike. And maybe the issues that didn't get to the public eye but were at the foundation of things that you were fighting for in this collective bargaining agreement. Because a lot of people, when they think of collective bargaining agreement, they only think about how much money you make or maybe what your benefit is, when really that's a very small percentage of the contract. The contract is dozens, if not hundreds of pages long, and it covers every aspect of the operation, safety. It covers, grievance procedures and protests and disputes and harassment issues. It literally covers, it's like a policy handbook, but it's an agreement between the parties to where, imagine if your corporation had to agree with an entity over the policy book. So my reason for belaboring this with you is just making sure that listeners understand that if you're non-union, you may think you just got to take all this, and you really don't in a union environment. So what were the core issues that you'd like to bring up that not only were you guys willing to fight for, that you achieved, and maybe some that you didn't achieve, but you know they're going to still be on the table next time, and you're going to chip away at again, next go around?
Yeah. So that's a great question. So, the issues that we really went on strike for were around AI and its effect on our members' ability to protect their own image. We also, obviously, around compensation. That was a very large one for us, specifically as the streaming industry, streaming television, as it's opposed to linear TV, which is the traditional television that we're used to watching. But streaming TV, the Netflix, the Hulus of the world, they really changed the business model. And our members were having a hard time finding the comparable revenue stream that they had in linear TV, the TV that we grew up watching, many of us, when we had three channels. In addition to that, our members over the last few years, specifically during the pandemic, have been burdened by the idea of having to produce their own self-tapes. When an actor auditions or interviews for a job now, they have to produce their own self-tape, which means they either have to own the equipment to do it, they have to have another person there to read with them as the other characters, or they have to pay a service to go and do that. And so the requirements of those self-tapes were such that they were getting abusive, and it was causing our members a lot of money and undue burden to actually get those done. And so those are the three top issues that we were really fighting for that probably the public saw the most of. Some of the other things, like common respect and hair and makeup for people of color, making sure that the people on our sets were trained to deal with a variety of hair types and skin tones. We fought for pension and health increases. They haven't been raised in 40 years. And so we fought to have those P&H contributions by our employers raised. As it pertains to my local specifically, the idea of geographic discrimination, where members across the country were being paid and given different working terms based on where they live throughout the country.
So, yeah, trying to exploit Atlanta or a right to work state, as we criticize and labor, it's not really a right to work. It's a right to work for less state. Trying to exploit that, right?
That's right. So what they're doing is, because we have such a robust tax incentive, they come here and they think it's a low-cost provider. And so they try to extend that out to their workforce. So what we are finding is that our employers coming into our local and looking to pay the local performers, the local members, less than members that come from other locals, specifically LA and New York, to come into our market, do the same work, but pay us less. And so the idea that our members, anytime there's an idea of discrimination or a feeling or a perception of a discrimination in anything that we do, we need to have a discussion about it and address it. And so we ask them to have a discussion about it so we can at least identify the problem and start building solutions so that all our members can appreciate the contract provisions equitably, right? Just like
Well, Eric, you know, let me be devil's advocate here for a second. Sure. It's their company. Shouldn't they be able to do what they want? It's their industry.
Yeah, they should do whatever they want, right?
Because if they do whatever they want, we go way back to where then, you know, to those days where they actually own their labor, right?
So. I personally think an employer has an ethical obligation to treat their members equitably.
Yes.
And I think anytime they see an area where that's not happening, I think they have a responsibility to do so. And so that's why we're fighting it, because we're a union, and a union is about unity and solidarity, and our members can't enjoy the level of solidarity that should be available for them if each of them are working at different work terms and working conditions. And so we want to try to avoid any type of low-cost provider scenario where it goes both ways, right? I don't want to be paid less for what I do, but I also don't want someone else to lose the job because of that, right? It goes both ways.
That's correct.
The best person should be put in the job, and then our employer should be obligated to do whatever it takes to compensate that person to do the job as they're intended to do.
Absolutely. This piques my interest, your image, the AI situation where you want to have a right over your image. Isn't it incredible that you work for a company, you're an actor, whatever you may be, and you actually are going to have to fight over who has the rights to your image through AI? Like, shouldn't that just be automatic? It's my image, man. But guess what? Corporate laws and employment law, unless you collectively bargain some of this stuff, and we all know that corporations have plenty of lawyers to stack up against a worker. You know, how do you battle against this, right? And so let's talk a little bit more about that. Should they obviously want control over that. That's your image. And isn't that, it's just a crazy concept to think that we'd have to even bargain that. Shouldn't the employer just agree with us on that position or agree with you, Eric?
Well, I think they should, obviously. I'm probably a little biased.
Just a little.
I think they don't want to give up any rights that they're not forced to, quite frankly. And I think they want to have the maximum level of usage and flexibility, but that's just not the case, because specifically for our industry and our members, I mean, our career is our image. And as soon as we lose control of it and we lose the ability and the leverage that it has, then we can no longer make a career.
So on that note, you said something. You said give up their rights, the employer give up their rights. Well, who gave them those rights to begin with? Like, what made everybody think that it's okay for a corporation or a business to own your rights to your image to begin with? Isn't that crazy that was the starting point?
It's crazy to me that they would actually conceive that they they have any kind of ownership to our rights. I think maybe they think because they put us on camera, you know, when we do on camera work, we do agree to allow our image and likeness to be distributed on their shows, right? We agree that our image and likeness can be used in the project. But the problem is when they use AI, what we were fighting for within the context of AI was the big difference is when I go to work, I know exactly what I'm doing. So I consent to go to work and I say these lines and I do these scenes. In a world with AI, they can take my image and make it do and say things that I never consented to, which it could be detrimental depending on what they decide to do.
Correct. Because had you known what that, whatever that role may be, you may have decided to turn it down. You may have been ethically against it, morally against it, whatever. It's like, that doesn't interest me. Again, I'm going to beat this drum hard. What makes them think they had the right to take that from you? And, you know, obviously it's a rhetorical question here, but that the reason why I'm drilling down on this is because workers experience this, whether they work in a warehouse, they're an actor, you know, whatever situation we're in as workers, these employers sometimes think that their rights go well beyond what they really should go. And it's because the corporate structure, the law that protects corporate America is so broad and is so I guess, limiting on labor itself. And it hurts us. And the purpose of our show is to expose this exploitation, is to explain to workers, you don't have to put up with this stuff.
That's right. That's great. I love that. We don't have to put up with it. That's what we're here fighting for. The force of our union and the power that we have in solidarity is what brought us to the table. The strike also gave us leverage to
worker power.
Worker power. That no, we do have a right to our image, and we will fight for it. And you can't move forward with your industry until we can agree on the terms of how we're going to move forward with this very unknown technology.
Yeah, and the streaming. So, you know, the streaming challenge that you have reminds me of radio artists, music from a few years ago when that shifted, right, from radio right. to then a lot of it becoming streaming, and how the residuals worked out and the challenges in that space. Very different. It's obviously a larger problem because you have all these actors. You have a lot more individuals and people that are involved in content that's streaming. I mean, look at, there's shows that we know that were filmed in the 80s and 90s that are replaying themselves over and over and over again. I mean, I love 70s too, Three's Company. I didn't get to watch it as a kid, so I get to watch it on Bravo, you know, and I, every now and then I run across one I didn't get to see, you know, I haven't seen, and they crack me up. My point is, you know, shouldn't the actors and everybody get a little bit of scratch for them making money on this? You know, not break the bank, but clearly whoever owns the rights to those productions, owns a right to that series, they're making money on it. You know, clearly a station is purchasing, and there's an exchange of money. And, you know, even if it's a small amount, make sure that everybody gets a piece of the action, because guess what? You know, if you share the wealth with everybody, then everybody can everybody's going to do a little better.
That's right. And that's what we're fighting for. We're fighting for our members to be fairly compensated for the work that they do, but also for the success of the platforms that these shows are on, right? Like, these shows don't succeed, or these shows and these platforms, they don't succeed in a vacuum. They succeed and they become billion-dollar industries on the backs of the people who do the work to get them there. And so we believe that they should be compensated. We should be compensated accordingly. And, you know, the linear, the traditional television model had a lot of avenues by which our members could recognize more compensation, reruns, DVDs, distribution opportunities, streaming. A show goes on a streaming service and it just sits there
yes.
forever. It doesn't go anywhere and they leave it there forever. And so, and it gets played over and over and over and over and over again, and they won't even tell us how often and how many people are watching. And so we had to come up with another avenue, and that's why we came up with this streaming bonus. It's a third rail of revenue that our members will be able to appreciate and build a career on, in addition to the residuals that already exist, both the domestic residuals, which we got a 2.5% increase on our caps, but also our foreign residuals that used to be tied to domestic. It used to be 35% of our domestic residuals were going to be paid as a foreign. They were very, very small payments. And now what we've been able to do is transition those foreign domestic payments into its own metric. So it's based on the subscriber base within any given region, which is going to be a real meaningful difference to our members and how they make money on any given show. And this streaming bonus thing will also be something that not only is a new bucket of money that never existed before, but it's another thing that we can go every contract negotiation and bargain to make that better and better outside of the residuals that we're already negotiating every contract period.
What a great job of articulating those issues, Eric. Thank
Thanks.
You very much. You know, what this strike reminded me of, something that Charles Barkley said, man, long, long, long time ago, probably 25, if not longer, years ago. He was talking about collective bargaining for the basketball players, and that what ends up happening is the Charles Barkley's, or the, at the time it had been the Magic Johnson's, or, you know, the Larry Bird's, he's like, we're going to get our money. We're going to get ours. But the average basketball player is not. And that's the problem. So with this situation, very similar. Yeah, your big actors, you know, your George Clooney's and, you know, all those big actors, they're going to get their piece. As a matter of fact, they got enough money they can survive a 10-year strike probably, right? But the average actor's not in that space. And what's important is that, you know, this isn't an all or nothing, shouldn't be an all or nothing society of the haves and the have nothings, right? This should be a situation where even everybody somewhere in the middle can survive on it. And what it reminds me of is that scenario where Charles Barkley is saying, hey, you know, this is for everybody that plays the game. And anybody that comes into this game should have a decent standard of living and should be able to support their family and recognize what their future is going to be like. And I would say a lot of this, there's some comparisons that could be drawn to this, right, for you guys, because this is about all the actors that, you know, you see but may not get the headlines or, oh, I recognize that face somewhere. You know, tell me about that.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think we represent 160,000 members, and I would say approximately 2% of our members are the people, the household names, the people that you know, the people that make millions and millions of dollars. Everybody else, the other approximately 98%, are working class actors who are just really trying to make a modest middle class existence for their family, but they work regularly. I mean, as Atlanta goes, I work pretty regularly, and still, you know, I still struggle and hustle to make a living for my family. And those are the people for whom we fight. And those are the people, unfortunately, who the public generally sees the least of. But I think during this strike, I think the public was able to be made aware that our industry is more than just the people that you recognize all the time. Especially with the strike, the people driving by in cars and seeing the people on the picket lines. I think there's been a little bit of a paradigm shift, and maybe I'm being naive or maybe I'm not accurate, but I do think that the world has opened up its viewpoint on who our members are. And our members are just the working class people that are similar to any industry, right? Working really hard, working 12, 13 hours a day, turning around in 12 hours and going back, and doing work to tell stories. And I'm a firm believer, quite frankly, that the world needs, my dad was a plumber. His dad was a contractor. So I believe the world needs plumbers, teachers, lawyers, doctors, but I also think the world needs storytellers. And when the pandemic happened, that's where we all went to make the world, either to escape the world or to make the world.
Man, what a great point. You're right. They went to Teamsters to make sure stuff was delivered to their door, and then they went to Netflix to kind of zone out for a while getting through it. Man, what a great point.
Yeah, look, I mean, I was in L.A. just recently, and I was walking down the street, and there's a UPS truck. There's a guy getting out of his truck, and we made eye contact, and I said, thank you. And he looked back at me and he said, thank you. And we knew exactly what we were talking about, right?
That's right.
I had my strike shirt on. I was actually on my way to a picket line. So he knew exactly where I was heading. He didn't recognize me, but he knew my shirt. And we looked at each other and we both knew exactly what we were talking about. We were thanking each other for holding the line and protecting each other in a time when the working class people needed help, needed support. And so we're all the same. We're just doing it in different industries, in my opinion.
And to answer your question, you said, in your opinion, you think there's a shift. There is a shift. I've been doing this for over 30 years, and I can see right now that workers are recognizing, and part of it is because corporations have gone too far. They've stepped a bit too far over. They've dumped all the responsibility of retirement vehicles and health care and all these things that we're talking about onto the employees and done this cash grab. You know, corporate profits are at all-time highs. These huge conglomerates buying each other. You know, especially you've seen it clearly in the media, where you actually weren't allowed to have this much power in the media. And now they have all this power. Corporate America wields all this power, and they're just taking more and more money out of the system. You know, and what they've done is they've starved out the little guy. They've starved out the average person. And workers are like, hey, wait a minute, man. I can't afford to buy a house. I can't afford to do this. I can't afford to do that. Like, what's going on here? And those workers are they're looking for a solution somewhere. And now, clearly, over the last few decades, you know, I would say there hasn't been a lot of social pressure to make sure labor unions are taught correctly. Clearly not taught in school, right? It's not a subject that has been well received, again, because Corporate America writes the books, right? The Corporate America sponsors someone to be on the school board. I can go on and on and on and on here, right? I think that corporate, it's a conspiracy. Corporate America is out to get us. I don't think it's a conspiracy. I think everybody knows it's true. I think it's not. It's nothing that's being hidden. And so I really, really want to commend you. You guys did a great job of messaging. You did a really great job of controlling the narrative and being right on top of making sure that the average worker could respect and understand what you're going through.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It's been an honor and a privilege to be a part of this journey. I got to tell you, it's a very meaningful journey to be a part of something like this and to really have a direct impact on the lives of so many people. And I'm proud and honored to have been a part of it for sure.
Well, thank you for joining us. And I appreciate you, you being patient with me. You know, I'm a long time organizer and first time radio show host. And, you know, what we're doing is looking to spread the union word. You know, we're really looking to just have good conversations with workers so they can understand, you know, what they can do and how other workers are solving problems in this space. We appreciate you being with us. Eric, we've been joined by Eric Goines. He's the Atlanta local president for SAG-AFTRA. We really appreciate your time. Thank you very much. You guys did a phenomenal job. And as you know, we absolutely, Teamsters, supported your picket line from day one. Teamsters, we pride ourselves on being that union that always draws a line and makes sure that we can try to bring everybody together. So, Eric Goines, thank you very much.
You are that union. I want to tell you that the local Teamster in Atlanta, Georgia.
728. I know those guys.
It's been nothing but open and generous and hospitable with their space and their time and their resources. I will be back at that Teamster Hall tomorrow night to have a celebration party with my local.
Awesome. Tell them Randy said hi. I know a lot of them over there. I've actually got a team in Atlanta that works on something else on another project I work on. But just, you know, pass on the word. And thanks for joining us, Eric.
I'll be back there next Tuesday. Thank you so much. Have a great afternoon and appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Wow. Here we are, KCAA, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM. I'm being told over here, I think I got 3 minutes, right? Is that what that is, Frank? You know, it's funny. I had asked a lot of people last week. First of all, wasn't that great, you guys? I mean, that's just, this is the average worker, right? His story, the way he articulated it perfect. Boy, explained the issues. Talked about the struggle. Great. Very proud to have him on our show. Anyway, what I was saying a second ago is I you know, talked to some people and said, hey, you know, I was nervous. I'm, you know, excited about doing this show. And, you know, not sure, you know, did I screw up when I was handling this or handling that or doing this or doing that? And they're like, no, we actually like the fact that you were open and honest about not being able to transition very well. You know, maybe I got 2 minutes. how you handle the transition. And, you know, I'm just going to try to handle this in a way that we approach it being real people. Like I'm sitting down in someone's living room and having a conversation and trying to get to know workers in the Inland Empire that may be listening. And quite frankly, with the streaming, like Eric had suggested, you know, people can listen all over the world. And so, you know, feel free to download or access the stream, access the ability to listen to it after the fact and share it with somebody. You know, I'm not trying to do self promotion here, for some gain other than to share a tremendous amount of knowledge that I have gained over 30 years with other workers and getting workers to understand there's hope out there. Millions of workers go to work every day and they feel that the process is futile. Give me one. Yep. 1 minute. They feel that the process is futile and they're not sure what to do. Hopefully stories like Eric, myself, and others that we're going to bring on and talk about will inspire workers to recognize that they don't have to give up, that they can do something about the situation, that they can collectively come together and make a change. And, you know, we really want to make sure, you know, what can you do to build worker power? We're going to leave every show where we ask the question, what can you do to build worker power? Can, you know, you're going to talk to your coworker, you're going to talk to your neighbor, you're going to talk to your family member and explain unions are a good thing. Unions have been a good thing for over 100 years. For over 100 years, it's been unions that have been making sure that middle-class people have a fair shake. Us and us alone, consistently. With that, we're signing off. KCAA, 1050 AM, 106.5 FM. Thanks for joining us.
KCAA Loma Linda. The legacy KCAA 1050 AM and Express 106.5 FM.
NBC News Radio, I'm Brad Siegel. The head of the FBI is warning the threat of a terror attack against